Welcome to your next step up the self-publishing mountain.
I'm Matilda Swift, author of Quintessentially British Cozy Mysteries.
And I'm Samantha Cummings, author of young adult books about magic, myths and monsters.
I've written the books.
Changed their covers.
Tweaked their blurbs.
Tried tools from a dozen ads courses.
And I'm still not seeing success.
Now, we're working together to plot and plan our way from barely making ends meet to pulling in a living wage.
Join us on our journey where we'll be mastering the pen to snag that paycheck.
Hello, and welcome to Pen to Paycheck Authors Podcast. I'm Samantha Cummings, here with my co-host Matilda Swift, and we're here to write our way to financial success. We're two indie authors with over a dozen books between us and still a long way to go towards the quit the day job dream. If that sounds familiar, listen along for our Mastery Through Missteps journey. Each week we cover a topic to help along the way, and this week's topic is going to be blurb writing. But before that, let's do our wins and fringes of the week. Nailed it. Matilda. Regale us with your wins and whinges, please.
Oh, I am winning all around this week. Personal win, I'm on the way to adopting two cats. So very excited about this. I had my home checked this week and I should be visiting the cats next week. And then I shall be the owner of two cats. I shall reveal more about them anon. My major win is BookBub. I have a BookBub Wednesday. It was very exciting. It felt like the week really built, you know, around it. So it was really nice. I had like all the formatting and things out the weekend. I had all the cover updated. I was like checking different formats and different covers in different places. That was really helpful. I sent my email out on Monday, and I had some other promos on Tuesday, and then the BookBub went out on Wednesday. And I say it's like Wednesday, maybe it was Thursday. I don't know. I feel like I've lost track. It was Thursday. It wasn't Thursday.
Yeah.
The week has just like disappeared in it. I also saw Elizabeth Gilbert speak on Wednesday. I've just had a lot going on.
Of course. Yeah, I totally
it was
forgot.
Fantastic. It has been the week. And then I went to see a really interesting, like, cute little amateur writing group had written a play they presented as a radio play on Friday. I've been so literary this week. But I'm also a BookBub superstar this week. It was fascinating. I think the best thing about it was like really getting to see parts of publishing that you don't get to see. So just looking at the way that other authors, there are trad authors in my BookBub, had set it up. The way that people's rank changed. I obviously tracked people's BookBubs on the days before and after and saw how their ranks changed. So it really was a great chance to see how different types of sales affect your rank in a way that I haven't really seen before because I haven't had such big numbers. So it was fantastic. Lots of things I've learned from it as well that I would do the same or differently or just that I got to learn. So really fun. I am 70% of the way to making the money back in 3 days, 4 days I'm meant to be. So excellent. And I think having judged by the rank, I think there must have been lots of borrowers. So I'm expecting the money to keep coming in. So I will update on that next week. But it feels like a win purely on the basis of like the getting to learn about it. And, you know, all the financial side of it is also fantastic, but it was fun and fascinating. How about you?
And you did also, before I go on to me, you did also get to number one in Amazon in Cozy Mysteries.
Yes. I was there for days. That was what was interesting. It there for days.
So it wasn't just that BookBub went well and you've noticed a spike in sales and reads. It is that you actually did get the little orange banner that says bestseller.
Yeah.
Which is, I think, absolutely fantastic. Like, I know we shouldn't, well, I say we shouldn't praise like the visuals, like the kind of vanity side of things. But why the hell not? Like, I think that's amazing. Everyone tries to get a little best-selling tag and you got it.
Yeah, I think what was really interesting.
I'm very excited for you.
Yeah, and it was really interesting. Like, it stayed at Cozy number one for a few days because I could see who was coming up behind me from the subsequent BookBubs. I had expected to be moved quite quickly, but I think just by sort of coincidence of the pattern of books that came up, mine stayed at number one and then slipped to number two after a couple of days, and it has only, I think, this morning dropped from number three, and it's still in the top 10. I think last time I checked. So, and that is several days later. So getting great visibility, I assume Amazon is sending it out to lots of people. I think there'll be lots of borrowers in the way. So really great. Like, couldn't have asked for better in terms of affecting the rank. I'm really glad that I did Facebook ads beforehand. I'm really glad that I did a quick promo on my newsletter list beforehand, that I got to test those things, that I knew enough to do it. Felt really good. I think next step is, what do I do now that I need to think about? How to kind of maintain that? But
yes,
that's for next week. Yep. I'm just going to enjoy that this week. So it's Sunday today, yes. Just a few days out, and it has been a tiring week. Because I said, I've also fit in lots of literary activities, including our full day mastermind session that we do once a month. I am so literary, and I'm working on my new book. So I fit a lot in. It is astounding that you still managed to do a day job.
Yeah, like, you've lived a year in a week.
Yeah.
Like, you've done more things than I ever do in 1 week.
And I still look so young. Well done. I don't know what it is.
Yeah. I know. It's crazy.
It's a miracle.
You've really been blessed. I don't really have any whinges this week. I think that last time we did this, my win was that I'd published a book. Because I'm pretty sure when we did the podcast, that was like the day it went out. I'm kind of like you, I have no idea.
I feel like your win was
what's going on. Yeah, my win wasn't that I was in Harrogate. I took the week last week to go away, and it was to work on stuff. And I'll say partial win in that I did do some editing. I didn't do as much as I wanted to. But my biggest win really was that I read two fantastic books. And I'm going to say that is my win. Because I kind of get stuck sometimes in, I think that I'm going to read a book really fast, and then it takes me a month. And I hate that. Like, I hate taking so long to read a book. I mean, I'm doing loads of stuff as well. So it's not really my fault. It's just that there aren't enough hours in the day. But I read two full books last week, and it felt fantastic. That really makes me feel like I'm on holiday when I can just devour some books. And they were two books that I felt changed my chemical makeup.
That is a great way to grab me a good book. So recommendations then, what are you sharing with us?
The first one that I read, which I read in 24 hours, which is like, I haven't done that in ages. I read Wayward by Amelia Clark. I think that's potentially her name. I'm really bad at remembering authors' names.
Is Amelia Clark not the actress from Game of Thrones?
But yeah, potentially. Yeah. I remember names, but I don't remember like who to attribute them to. I know it's really bad. I've got a terrible memory for names. So
that's my superpower. So, sorry, what was her name?
Amelia Hart.
Amelia Hart.
I knew there was Amelia. and that book was, I know, it's really bad. I'm just turning into my mother. It's terrible. So that was a book that, yeah, I feel like it kind of touched like my witchy, like nature witch soul. You know, like, it really made me feel like, oh, like everything around me is magical. I am part of a magical world. It was a very nice read. It was a little bit harrowing in terms of, like, there was a lot of horrible things, like a lot of difficult relationships for women in the book. Mm-hmm. But it was still quite an empowering read. So that was very good. And then I just finished Ninth House by Leigh Bardugo.
Bardugo.
You see, I can't even, I'm looking at her name and I still can't say it. Like, I'm like, Leigh Bardugo. Like, that's not her name. Terrible.
It's close. It's pretty close.
Yes. Yeah, it was close. And that was a 5-star book for me. 5-star book. I wanted to jump into the book. Can't remember her name. Love every word that she wrote.
Irrelevant. Because the name on the cover is the least important words, like, in terms of the quality of words. I really find it odd how people really love signed books. Because I'm like, those are the least important words in the book. Like, if I've slaved over the entire book, like, I don't need to value just the ugly scroll on the inside cover. I've got terrible handwriting.
No, I have got quite a lot of signed books, but it's mostly just because I was talking about this earlier in our chat, in our little mastermind meetings, that I really love to pre-order books. Like, I feel like it's just such a nice little treat. I just feel so excited to be involved in like the hubbub of somebody's publishing journey. But I just love pre-ordering books. And so a lot of people sign pre-ordered books. So I have like a selection of them. But yeah, I'm not really that interested in it. It's not really something that I care about.
Mm-hmm.
Ah, I love reading.
tell us also a little bit more about the book that you published this week, just so it doesn't go by unnoticed. We should celebrate.
Oh, yes. I know. I'm so bad. I never celebrate. So it was the third book in a series that I've written called the Fantasy Girl series, and it's about, is that they're middle grade, but they are kind of a cusp book, but the protagonist is 9 years old, so middle grade books. And it's about a young girl in 1930s Hollywood who discovers that magic and monsters are real, and she gets caught up in this whole magical, mystical world, and it's all about her trying to find her footing and figure out, like, if she's got magical powers, and trying to save her parents and her mum, and like all this like family stuff. So it's kind of like a fun little dramatic fantasy adventure, and I do love it. And this is the third, and it's not the final book, but I am unsure whether I'll continue the series, which is something that we may talk about in the future. Mm-hmm. Yes. So potentially a conversation for another podcast, but I'm not sure if I'll have the time to finish it. It's not a series that people are that interested in. So I finished this book and published it because I'd started the process, and it was just nice to get it finished and off my desk. But it's not hugely successful, and I've never really pushed it to be, and it's not really the genre that I've wanted to write in. It was just a fun little experiment that I'm kind of done with now. But it's okay. But I mean, I love the series. I do love it. And this latest book has a magical library in it, so I thought I'll go out on a high.
Lovely.
So yes, a lovely, a magical school and a magical library.
Mm-hmm. And you've learned plenty from publishing it.
Oh, I've learned so much from publishing it. The first in the series was my first self-publishing foray. So this series is really something that I learned a lot from. I learned how to format a book. I learned how to do covers with this book. I learned the whole format. I learned the whole publishing process with this series. So it hasn't been a waste of time. I've loved it. It's been lovely. And now I'm on to bigger and better things.
Ooh, exciting. Okay. So speaking of which, we are finishing up our series on writing as marketing now. Though not really finishing the topic. Obviously, we'll come back to it many times. But we've done a sort of a 4-episode set on it. The last one we're doing is about blurb writing, which is nobody's favorite type of writing. And we have been talking about it all day because it's definitely something that we find is better done collaboratively, because it is unpleasant tasks are always better done together. So tell us a bit about blurb writing, how you do it, what's worked and not worked in the past, and what you've got under your belt right now in terms of blurb writing.
Oh, got all the big questions for me right at the start there. generally, I've never disliked blurb writing. I do see it as a challenge. And I don't think I've particularly been great at it, but I also haven't been the worst at it. So it's kind of a thing that I do enjoy doing, as like, it's in itself, it's a creative project to try and distill your entire book into the snappiest of snappy bits of writing. It's just, it's crazy.
Is that what you're trying to do?
And
that, I think, is the problem.
Exactly. So this is the problem. So in the past, I have tried to explain my book in the blurb. And recently, I've come to the conclusion that that's not what you should do. So I've always tried to kind of hit every action point in the book, in the blurb, thinking that that's the thing that's going to make people want to buy the book. But what I've learned recently, and like I bought a lot of books last week, and I bought some books where the blurbs were purely for research. Definitely. Yeah. Yes. It wasn't just me splurging in a bookshop. No, it was me splurging in a bookshop. I picked up books, and there were most of the books I knew that I wanted to buy already because they've been on my list for a while. So the blurb wasn't super important. I just knew of the books and I wanted to read them. One of the books I bought that I knew that I just wanted to read no matter what, because it had been recommended to me so many times, is Ninth House. And I'll talk about that in a second. And the other book was a book that I'd heard of, but I didn't know anything about the story. And the reason I bought it was because it's had something particular in the blurb, which made me immediately say, I'm reading this.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I'll talk about these two things now, and then go into what I think, like, the mistakes I've made. Well, I know what mistakes I've made, but like the way that it's shaped how I'm thinking about blurbs at the moment. If that sounds okay to you. I don't want to like bog up the conversation. but I'll start with Ninth House because I had been recommended this book a lot. And now that I've read it, I know why, because it's essentially everything that I love wrapped up in this glossy cover. Oh, absolutely
beautiful cover.
It.
Yeah.
And
we have got a video feed, so if you show the cover, people will be able to see it.
Yes.
Ooh, so, shiny, shiny snake.
Backwards, but shiny, shiny snake.
It's not, it's
and
forwards,
also
it reverses
has...
it.
Okay, can you see it forwards?
Yeah.
Okay, that's fine. Okay, thank God, because I can't. So it has a little thing from Stephen King on the front, which is just like, if you could get somebody to drop you a nice...
I mean, he does blurb a lot, a nice so text. He probably gets around to all of us at some point.
He does. Yeah. Yeah. For this book, he said it was impossible to put down, and I'm sure he'll put that on
he
my
says
book
that
as well
a
at
lot.
Some point in the future. But we also have a little snippet from Lev Grossman and Joe Hill. And I mean, I love these. I think Lev Grossman's was one of the best fantasy novels I've read in years. And Joe Hill said, Ninth House rocked my world.
Did he just get
it's
his copy from his dad?
To get people.
I feel like this is cheating.
So
that was a two for one. Like,
immediately it's got some things on the blurb and stuff and on the cover that you just think, wow, these are some big, lovely words to say. But the thing that shocked me the most about it is that the blurb doesn't really say much about anything. It doesn't give anything really away. And
well, no, that's not true. It says a lot. So I've just read the blurb, right? And the blurb
yes.
says a lot. But from having now read it you know
lot.
The blurb says not a lot compared to what's in the book.
Not as much. Yeah, so the blurb is a glossy picture of what the book looks like. So it's like the best version. It's like
the butter.
The airbrushed. It's pure butter. It is like the most buttery of butter you could ever come across. So this is ghee, which is what like what is classified as like the biggest butter you can get. So it's like pure absolutely pure clarified, clog your veins, stop your heart,
drown in
butter.
It, drink it from the tap.
And when I read this, I thought this book sounded fantastic. And then I read the book and reread the blurb and realised that whilst the blurb is super buttery and has all of the things that the book contains, it doesn't actually have any of the details that I would have... I mean, I wouldn't have written the blurb like this, essentially.
As in you would have written it better?
No, not at all. I would have put way more information in it. And that's where my brain kind of exploded because I realized that you can write a blurb. I'm going to say blurb so many times, but you could write a blurb that is just purely butter glossing over the nooks and crannies that you think your story rests in. And I think that's where I've been going wrong all this time. I think all this time I've been thinking, oh, I should be saying as much as possible in my descriptions to really like show people like tell people's names and specific locations and specific events that happen. But that's not, I don't know. I just feel like,
the issue is they're the things that stand out to you. They're often people like, oh, I know that's a really key part of the book. I should mention that. But it's like, that's not a key part of the book. Someone that hasn't read the book. Can you give an example from that blurb, from the Libardugo one, of like something where the blurb says one thing and then if you can sort of hint vaguely at what it actually really means in the book?
Yes, so it's in the second paragraph where we've already found out that she's been accepted or like taken into Yale. So she's going to be in Yale's freshman class. And it says, her free ride comes with a catch. She has been tasked with monitoring Yale's secret societies, notorious haunts of the rich and powerful.
Ooh.
And that, I mean, oh, I know, because we all love Yale and we all want to be. I just want to be there.
I want to be Rory Gilmore.
I want to be Rory Gilmore, except not Rory Gilmore, but
yeah,
like a better version of it.
Yeah.
And whilst it is about secret societies, and whilst the main character does monitor the secret societies, it kind of hints at a little bit of spy work, I guess. It sounds like she's going to be like sneaking around spying on secret societies, like Rory trying to get in with
Life and Death Brigade.
I can't even think what they're called now. Life and Death Brigade, thank you. In Omnia Paratus.
It's in my head. And so it constantly kind of
sounds, yes, it's so it sounds like she's going to be kind of going undercover, and it's going to be sneaking around, but that's not it at all. So what the whoever wrote the blurb is, I mean, it could be that she's written it herself, but
it will not be that she's written herself. Having worked in publishing, no. It is someone very lowly who is very good at that.
Yeah. They've done a great job of making it so mysterious. It seems so much more mysterious and so much more thrilling. I mean, the book is thrilling. There's so much that's going on. But they've distilled it to the most important buttery parts,
and so it sounds like they've captured the emotion. Like, it's thrilling, not in the way that it sounds like captured. A back cover, but it is thrilling. Whereas if you read that book and it was all like comfy and calm and cozy, you would feel betrayed by the blurb. But even though the blurb doesn't actually say exactly what happens, it's got the same emotional tone.
Yes, and so many more things happen in the book than is described on the blurb as well. So it's the blurb basically says she's going to go and look at these watch these secret societies and see what they're up to. But there's also a dead girl on campus and she's looking into what's happened. And that kind of seems like just two events that happen in the book. That might be what the whole book's about. But there is so much going on. There is so many twists and turns. And those two incidents of like her being involved in the secret societies and the girl and the dead body that shows up are literally the the two smallest parts, of the whole book.
But they're enough to grip you, right? You read that and you were like, oh, absolutely, I'm reading that.
Secret societies, Yale, dead body.
Yeah.
And then sinister and extraordinary things happening.
And trying to bring down the rich and powerful. Oh, so many things I want to read.
Yes. Yeah.
It's not even my genre, and I absolutely want to read that.
It's a masterclass, I think, and it's one that I want to learn from. And so today we're talking about blurbs, and I have recently changed one of my blurbs on Amazon, but I didn't particularly like it. I just updated it for the sake of it, just for something to do, because you know, why not? And then going off this particular book, we decided we were going to write our own blurbs in this style. And I do think that mine now sounds better with this kind of style.
And yeah, I really
it
think
it might be that I've
there's a huge benefit to copying somebody's writing. Almost like it was an exercise that I did. I did a master's in creative writing at Manchester University, and really, really like the main task that we did that stuck with me was one where you took the opening paragraph to somebody's work, and say it was the opening paragraph and it was about someone's falling into a river, and you take the exact sentence structure, so it might be, you know, frontal adverbial followed by like a noun phrase and then something with like two adverbs in sequence describing a very small simple noun. So like literally that's exact sentence pattern, and try and retain the feeling like in terms of level of like urgency or tone, but make it about a whole different topic. So instead of being about someone falling into a river, it could be about somebody making a cake. And you have to keep the exact sentence structure and the exact tone, but change every single word. It's incredibly effective to help you see the mechanics of language in a way that, like, I think we're often very good at as writers. We know, no, we can do it, but we don't always know what we're doing. And I think it's a particularly good task to do with writing types that you maybe don't practice that much, like blurb writing. We don't write blurbs that often. And it can be hard to switch between the long form of novel writing into this like short, pithy marketing speak, like where you're not trying to say everything, you're not trying to clarify things or set a particular introduction, you know, beginning, middle and end structure. You're trying to just entice So I always think it's really helpful if you find a good example of something to try and model it as close as possible, because then you can always change it. So we have done today, we copied the model very as close as we possibly could with our next books.
Yes.
Knowing that we can go in and change it. And also figuring out when we were doing it, we read them bit by bit to each other, figuring out the bits that didn't work for our books or for our particular genre, and figuring out where we might want to change it and why. But having that as a model to use was much more helpful than what I've done in the past, which has always been to look at other blurbs in my genre and copy that. I think the problem with that is, because that's always the advice, right? It's like, see what works well in your genre and do the exact same thing. Often there are people who are very popular, not because of their blurbs, because of nothing through their blurbs. And actually, they can be terrible blurb writers. And they are really good at other marketing things that then bring people into their books and make their books really popular. And if you copy their blurb, it's actually the worst thing they do. Like, they might be fantastic at social media, terrible at blurbs. You copy their blurb, your book is tanking. Their blurb is great for their really specific audience. Like, they have maybe got quite a slightly off-center audience for cozies that you haven't necessarily understood because you don't maybe know the work that well. There's lots of reasons why copying blurbs, I think, doesn't always work. And also, I have tried copying different blurbs and changing it, and they don't feel quite right. Other ones in cozies, and I think having changed them, it didn't necessarily move the needle. And so I really wanted to try this, where we found something that was not in my genre at all, and just figured out, like, I really want to try something emotional, because that ties into what we talked about with Butter before. Like, I really want to see if we can find an emotional hook, rather than this is the exact right structure. We need the structure where you introduce this. Like, I think a lot of blurbs are beginning, middle, and end. They'll be like, set the scene, give the crisis, end with a like, oh, can she fix it? But I think that Leigh Bardugo one was so impactful because of Butter, and it made me want to read it. It made me desperate to read it. I have got no time in my life. I want to read that book on a holiday, just like you. I think it is a perfect holiday book. So I did not accept your generous offer to lend it to me, because it would sit on my bookshelf and I'd be annoyed at it because I'd have time to read it. I want to take it on holiday at some point and just like, I want to read it in 24 hours. I want to just like hole up in a little like caravan with, or a cabin with like rain on the roof, and I'm in bed and I'm just reading that book and doing nothing else. Maybe getting hot chocolate. That's it.
Yeah.
That just because that blurb.
I think how this book should be read. Yeah. Just because of the blurb. Yeah. I think you're right as well. Like, I have in the past copied other people's blurbs, and I've taken books that I know have sold well. I've just not even like of indie books, but just like trad published books that are some of my favourite books. And I've read the blurbs and copied the style and assumed that was enough. Mm-hmm. But it wasn't. I just trusted that that was like the thing to do, and that was the thing that was going to make the blurb good, but it wasn't. It wasn't.
I think because I didn't. I'm assuming because of you, the same as you, because I didn't know why the blurb was good. I couldn't really copy it.
Yes.
Whereas with this Leigh Bardugo one, because it ties in so closely to the Butter, what we've been doing, I know why it's good. I can see every word choice, so that when I want to choose my own word, I can pick the right sort of word to go in there. And in fact, I had a blurb that I quite liked for my upcoming book. I had spent a long time thinking about this series and this new book, and I really had distilled down. I really wanted to make it about the things that I absolutely love. So it's about baking, and it's set in a street full of bookshops, and it's got a sort of wayward child who's a bit of a rebel who's gone away and like, you know, gone against the grain of her family. And then she's the only one that can fix the family's problems when a murder happens in the street. So it's got things in that I absolutely love. And it's even got, I absolutely love Christmas more than anything. And it's got a Christmas bookshop. So it's like, oh gosh, do I want to put that in? And do I want to mention some specific cakes? So I got all the things in that I like. And I fed that into AI. I use Gemini. I think it's better than ChatGPT for things that I like writing anyway. So when I do like marketing type writing, I feel like Gemini comes out with better results. So I put it in Gemini, I put all the kind of things in the book in there, and I asked it for two versions. I asked it for one version that was full of book related puns and one version that was full of cake related puns, because the book is kind of a mashup of the two. And then I just took bits and pieces of the two different blurbs and put them together to make one that kind of captured both those things. And it was much better than any blurb I've written before. Really leagues ahead, because it wasn't trying to, because AI, Gemini doesn't know the book inside out. It knows what I tell it.
Yes.
And then it can turn that into enticing, persuasive language. So I like my blurb. And then when we read the Leigh Bardugo one, I was so desperate to read that book that I was like, okay, I want to rewrite my blurb using that same structure just to see how impactful it is. And also kind of just interested to see. So that is a sort of urban fantasy type book. And it sounds like a similar genre to Cozy Mystery, but it's actually a miles away from Cozy Mystery, even though they're both about broad strokes, similar things like small closed environment, amateur sleuth. They're worlds apart. So I was like, oh, I couldn't possibly, the same blurb structure couldn't really work. But it was really good to do. And I think the blurb is excellent and feels much butterier. So I've now got two versions. I think I will go kind of a combination of the two to put them together. And I even took things from my original blurb and put it into the Leigh Bardugo one while we were writing it, because they were like, oh, this part I think really captured it, even though it's not the same structure as hers, it's got the same essence. So now I've got two, and I think we talked about maybe reading our two blurbs, original and then transformed. Do you want to go first with yours?
I'll start, because mine is the longer one. So the blurb that I currently have on Amazon for my book Curse of the Wild,
and that's book one in the series,
one that I did have. And this is book one in the series, so book two is out later this year. And I did take to Gemini to help me write this. And when I first pulled it through and tweaked little bits here and there, I enjoyed it. I thought it was a good blurb. But then looking back, like a week later, after the Gemini mist had parted, mm-hmm. it's like, it's just so exciting. You're like, oh, wow, Gemini, you've managed to sell me my own book. And then reading it back,
I think it's way too fast. It's so fast, like it's been something you would agonize about for hours, and to like did it in 2 seconds. Like, oh gosh, it must be good.
Yeah. Yeah, like, oh, this is like so much better than what I was had come up mm-hmm. with. Like, it took me ages. So my current blurb is very wordy. So I will read this and I'll read my other one. Define their pact's laws, werewolf sisters Lucy and June embark on a desperate mission. Save their sister from the untamable wild, a horrifying curse with only one escape, death. Their hunt leads them to a desolate desert town shrouded in secrets. Here, distrust is as thick as the sand and whispers of dark magic fill the air. With danger at every turn, Lucy and June must navigate a web of suspicion. An unlikely alliance with a wise woman and her enigmatic grandson offers a glimmer of hope, but the clock is ticking. As they delve deeper, the sisters uncover a sinister truth. The wild might not be a disease, but a weapon unleashed by a hidden enemy. Unleashing their own wild fury, Lucy and June fight to expose the truth and confront the darkness before it claims their sister and unleashes a terror far greater than any curse. Excellent. So wordy.
Yeah, but it feels like, it's full of tempting things, but I think a lot of the wordiness makes it seem very like mystical and vague. And it's a little bit hard to figure out, where is the butter? That's it. It's like, I think all the essence of the good things are in there, but there's no I'm absolutely dying to read this.
I think there are like some good tropes in here, like sisters on a mission, curses, small towns with secrets, a wise woman and an enigmatic grandson. So you know, like there are some tropes in there that I think are hooky, but definitely not buttery.
Mm.
So this is the butter-filled blurb that I wrote today, and this is based on Ninth House. Lucy Parrish is the best tracker in her pack. She's defied the laws that bind her family, become a teenage runaway, and she has one mission, find her cursed sister. But the cure comes at a cost. With barely a penny to her name and the trail turning to ice, she needs allies fast, but who can she trust? When a body is discovered, Lucy must confront the curse that consumed her sister. Now the blood has been shed, pack law dictates one thing only, death. Can she overcome a magic she doesn't understand and find a cure for the curse of the wild?
So
shorter?
Mm-hmm.
It's definitely, it doesn't have half as much detail.
Mm-hmm.
But I do think it captures the essence of the book.
Yeah. I think it's
and
also got...
I do think it has butter.
Yeah. I think there's like keywords in there that really stick with you. So things like the pack in the first sentence, like instantly a sense of like the book is going to be about those like tense family relationships. And I think removing the idea of the wise old woman and the enigmatic grandson, they weren't giving me anything. I was like, maybe they'll be good, maybe they'll be rubbish. I have no sense of like it's going to be gripping in this way. Whereas
yes,
the sort of the stakes and the consequences in this version feel much more, I'm much more eager to find out what happened.
And this one in particular shows that it's about a girl who is desperately trying to find and cure her sister. So it's very more family oriented, and removes any of the fluff, like any of the kind of just like the drama that you find out when you read the book. So I think that I do think it's a better version. I do think I need to maybe tweak it a little bit, but I think it has distilled it to what the book is about, which is like a family sister based werewolf drama.
Yeah, and we just wrote these today, so I think we'll give them like time to rest and then come back and like, oh, okay, I can see where to edit these. But it does feel like such a useful practice just to get them drafted and to see the process of drafting it, to see like where you're tempted to like pull out into like lots of details. So your original blurb is two sisters. And this blurb is just one sister. Did you kill one person in the book?
Yes, because it is just... I actually did remove somebody from the book, but they never were in it from like the published one. But it is just one POV. So it is just from the point of view of Lucy. She does have a sister that she is on this mission with, but she's obviously... You don't ever see anything from her point of view. So I was way too focused on making it seem... like just making it obvious that there was more to it than just one girl, but as soon as you start reading it, you'd know, because it's the first thing on the page is the interaction between the two of them, as they get off the bus in this town. So there's
and
no
doesn't
point
change
putting
the
it in the blurb
or the butter for her to have a sister with her.
No,
because
no,
in both versions they're looking for a sister. It makes no difference because it's slightly confusing the first version of like, oh, these two sisters are looking for a cursed sister. It's like, wait, is one of these sisters cursed?
I know. That was always, has always been the most difficult part of me when I, like, my writing of any copy, to just trying to do any kind of sales copy. And I'm always like, oh, two sisters trying to find another sister. And I've never found a good way to say it. And now I'm realizing, like, there was, because I didn't need to say that there was two sisters, because that's just, like, it's
you'll
not
find
important.
Out. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Is there anything else in there where
you've
consciously decided to make it not factually correct? That it is like a slight fudging of what's in the book?
I think the line, the cure comes at a cost, is a nice buttery thing that probably won't happen the way that it sounds. So there is... There is kind of a cost to it, but it's not how it sounds in that.
But is it emotionally how it sounds?
Like, I'm kind of happy. Yes, I would say so. Yes. The cost is family oriented. So it's fine to put it in. I don't feel like I'm lying.
Yeah.
But it does feel like I'm zhuzhing up something.
But I think it's not even zhuzhing, right? It's often just like really simplifying. Like, to clarify it.
I'm just
clarifying
it
like butter.
Yes.
Oh my goodness.
Clarifying the butter. I do really love this blurb, and I think that it's probably not the one that I'm going to go with, but it's 90% there.
Yeah.
So would you like to tell us your original blurb and your new one?
Yeah. So I quite like the original blurb. I think... So my book I haven't written, so that's also, I think, significant when putting together this blurb and figuring out what belongs in it and what doesn't. I've planned most of the book in quite a lot of depth, and I have sketched out quite a lot of it, and I'm about four chapters into writing it, so about 10% of the way through writing it. So I know the book quite well, but I think... I am not so hung up on the details as I would be if I had written the book. So I think actually I prefer writing the book before the I prefer writing the blurb for the book now, just because I am such a one for getting really hung up on like, oh, but it's like, here's seven people that you need to know before you read the book. It's like, you're just trying to get someone to know, like, is emotionally this the right book for me? They don't need to know the exact name of like every person you're going to bring up. So my original blurb, because I haven't written the book, my original blurb, I think, is already relatively strong on like focusing on emotional things. But I maybe also like yours, AI made it quite wordy. And I think the stakes are a bit low, not buttery enough. So this is my original. Agatha Askew, the black sheep with a talent for scones and scandal, has returned to the quaint English book town of Plattenbach Spring. But Agatha's not following the family's well-worn plotline. Instead of stocking shelves with first editions, she's baking up a storm in parchment paper tea rooms. The Askews, a dynasty of esteemed booksellers, are less than thrilled, particularly when a dead body pops up in her father's shop, clutching a note that leaves a bad taste in everyone's mouth. Determined to clear his name and maybe earn a crumb of family approval, Agatha plunges into a world of dog-eared secrets, literary feuds, and motives more layered than the lightest milfoy. Can she unravel the plot before the final chapter is written on her father's reputation? It's definitely slightly longer than the one I've come up with now, and less battery. So this is the new version. Agatha Askew is the biggest disappointment of her Booktown founding family. A black sheep and bake-off failure with a talent for scones and scandal, Agatha was in desperate need of a fresh start. But the quaint English tea room she inherits comes with a catch. She has been tasked with mending the ties that bind her family, a long lineage of literary royalty. Now there's a dead body in a bookshop, clutching a clue that points to her father. Determined to clear his name and earn a crumb of family approval, Agatha plunges into a world of dogged secrets, literary feuds, and motives more layered than the lightest milfoy. Can she unravel the plot before the final chapter is written on her father's reputation? So that feels hookier, I think, butterier. I'm still going to work on it, but I think it definitely felt good to follow a clear model and try and make choices consciously based on like how would I make my book fit into this pattern rather than how do I distill 70,000 words into 100?
Yeah. I think it definitely, the second one has, the first one is great because I love the first one, but it does seem more of a mouthful, excuse the pun. And the second one is a lot more concise, has like so much more, I think, emotion to it. Like it feels much more like this. I can tell what the stakes are more in the second one. But I know what you mean because, like mine, I feel like yours is probably just missing like the thing that makes it yours. Like that's what I feel like mine's missing. I think it's missing a bit of me in it. And maybe
I think it's quite fast paced, like for a cozy blurb. I've forgotten the word blurb, anyway, said it 10,000 times. It feels quite tense because it's not from a cozy blurb. So I think it's useful to follow this model.
Yes.
And useful to follow a model from a different genre because then you can more conspicuously see what's being done and not done, rather than trying to copy someone who is maybe only popular because they have been at it for 30 years or they are great at socials.
Yes.
And I think I will keep doing this. I'll keep maybe looking at different genres of blurbs and following that model and then kind of piece together a few different ones into a really strong blurb overall and then have something where I'm really focused on the butter rather than the blow by blow honesty of the book.
Yeah, I think that's it. I think it's fine to have like some of the stuff in there, but you don't have to put everything in there. That's where I've been falling down this whole time. And it's probably just left over from when I was trying to write synopses and sending things to agents. You just learn that you have to put as much up front as you can to try and get them to see it, like the whole picture as quickly as possible to try and convince them that they want to buy the book. And that, I don't need to do that now because now I have to try and think of myself as a publisher who is now selling the product. Like, Yeah.
I know who's
forever
blurbs
having those moments.
Yeah, I think my next step is looking at the blurbs of Theodora Taylor, who wrote the book on butter, literally, who also writes romance novels. I know she actually has a course on buttery blurb writing, but I think I would really like to start by looking at her blurbs and using one of those as a model and just kind of incorporating some ideas from that and seeing what feels right and doesn't feel right when I'm trying to describe my books using that same structure. So plenty of things to work on.
Yeah, that's a good plan.
I definitely feel 1,000% more confident writing blurbs than I did when I first started writing novels, which was just painful and embarrassing.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to it because I'm going to start writing the blurb for the book that I'm editing at the moment, which is out at the end of this year. And I'm really looking forward to doing it now. Mm-hmm. After we've done this, after our meeting today and talking about it and trying a new method, I'm just so like juiced up. I can't wait.
Fantastic.
So I suppose we could wrap this up here and say what we're going to talk about next week, because next week we are starting a new series on books as products.
Ooh.
And our first episode is going to be soda can strategies. Stay with us on this. this is something we've come up with. So
yeah.
This is going to be what everyone's talking about. So what are your thoughts on this at the moment? If you want to, I don't know if you want to explain it or if we're going to leave it as a mystery and explain it next week.
Oh, interesting. I feel like it's, I think the thing about the idea is it's both very simple and very complicated. So I think maybe we won't tell people what it's about, because if you kind of link the ideas together of the next series coming up is books as products. And our first episode in that is called Soda Can Strategies. Maybe that will kind of give you some prompts to think about what it might be going to talk about. And we will get into it. We will do a deep dive on that next week. We will be adding to the pantry of book publishing metaphors and getting some
like where are you going with this?
Yeah, because it's next to the butter now. So we'll have like butter and soda cans.
Yeah.
Yes, we'll be adding to the pantry of techniques. Yes, it does feel uncomfortable to call it soda can because we don't call it soda in the UK, but I think soda can strategies really rolls off the tongue well. So that is why we've chosen the name. And if you don't agree, you are incorrect.
No, I really like it. I think when you said it and I wrote it down, I was like, oh, yes, that's nice. I like it. Yeah, I'm excited to talk about it. It's definitely a mindset. It's going to be a mindset episode more than anything else. So everybody listening, make sure to bring a cup of tea or coffee and just
prepare for some epiphanies. I think it's going to be an epiphany episode.
It will be an epiphany episode for sure. Okay.
Yes, well, I will look forward to seeing you then.
I suppose that's that.
Yeah.
Yes. Thank you very much. Goodbye.
You've been listening to Pen to Paycheck Authors.
Stay tuned for our next episode and don't forget to subscribe to learn how to write your way to financial success.